We're bringing the meeting to order at 7 o'clock. The invocation will be done by Mike Spence and the flag salute by George Fuller.
Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can gather here as the Wesco Unified School District Board of Trustees at this meeting. We're grateful for the staff that is here that will be celebrated, and we're grateful for the parents and the students and those that work so hard on their behalf. We ask a blessing upon them and upon us as we consider things that will do things that are in their best interest. In this, we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Here.
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 Present.
Here. We are now, we'll recognize the classified employees of the year. Okay, let's have a round of applause. This is one of our favorite board meetings when we get to recognize the hardworking people that make up the West Covina Unified School District, because all of us know how much we depend on you and how much easier you make our jobs than if we didn't have you. And so we're very grateful to each of you, and the board is happy to have this recognition ceremony, and I'm glad that many of our principals are here to share that and to honor each of you. We're going to start, just so you know the process, Mrs. Kelly, my assistant, basically works with our schools to nominate, and then there's a committee that selects the District Employee of the Year overall. So we're going to start by each school and who has been selected, and then at the end we will talk about the Employee of the Year of the entire district. So we'll start with California, and our Employee of the Year is an instructional special ed aide by the name of Nancy Bussard.
And I enjoy what I do. I've been doing it for numerous years, and I've made a lot of great friends and met a lot of great children that have grown up through the years, your son included. Yes. Okay, thank you.
We now have the cafeteria manager of Cameron, Kathy Rocha. Yay! We have an instructional aide from Merced, Alta Shearer. From Merlinda Elementary, we have instructional aide for SFA, Amanda Braun. Congratulations. We have the custodian, hardworking custodian, Monta Vista, Al Calvillo. Yeah.
thank you, everybody, for coming, my family, my extended family, the Monta Vista staff, and a lot of my friends here from the school district. Keep God first, and he'll give you all the strength you need.
From Orangewood Elementary, Linda Rodriguez, media assistant. Represented by Mrs. Donaldson.
Thank you so much. I know that she's thrilled, so thank you very much.
From Vine Elementary, the hardest working office manager, Nancy Watkins. Honestly, our office managers are very critical to our job, and we have another one that we have to honor tonight from Wesco, Maria Levitt.
I would like to say something. I want to thank my husband.
Yay.
And the children that are here, and the staff from not only West Cove, but Monta Vista, because they're my first family. And also the district office, because of their support.
Thank you. From San Jose Edison, our hardworking attendance accounting clerk, Shirley Johnston. From Edgewood Middle School, our custodian, Rick Castillo. Congratulations. Congratulations. A face that we see all around the campus at Holland Crest Middle School, our campus security, Louis Cox.
I'm surprised, but I'm thanking everyone. I know people from West Covina and Holland Crest, and it's just an honor to receive this employee.
Congratulations.
And just
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Oh, yeah.
Our hard-working attendance accountant clerk from Coronado, Bertha Rodriguez.
I just want to say it is my privilege to work for Coronado and for the district. Also, I'd like to thank all my staff and everyone that came to celebrate with me and those that are back that couldn't make it. And I want to thank Mr. Seaman, of all people, because he has been a good mentor. If I have questions, I can go to him directly. And especially my new boss, I really am enjoying my work. Thank you.
From Walnut Grove Middle School, our custodian, Gilberto Moreno. From West Covina High School, our technology aide, Barbara Rivera.
Employees when you have good bosses and good students and just a bunch of great people around you. So, thank you.
From our administrative offices, a person that does just about anything you ask her to do, she's the irrigation grounds maintenance worker at everything else, Terry Garcia.
Guys, including my bosses and all the maintenance, because it takes maintenance to get out there and do what we do for you guys. So thank you all.
Thank you. We had it sung so beautifully to us. What a wonderful day it is. And the people that were honored today really make a wonderful day for the students every time they come. If it's the way the campuses look, the first contact they often have are many of you that care for their children on the yards, or the parents come in and need to talk to somebody in the office. You're their first contact. You make us shine. And the biggest thing you do is make a difference for the students in this district. And my son was benefited from many of you sitting in this room day to day on the play yard or making it safe for him on the yard. The aides that worked with him every day. You've made his experience here wonderful, and all of the other students here. My nephews and nieces come home and rave about you all. So it's so wonderful to be a part of this, and then to see you come and share with us your spirit, and so humbly. I mean, you give so much, but you're so humble about it. So thank you for making the difference for everybody. Now, for the moment you've all been waiting for. The District Employee of the Year, Al Cavero. The Board of Education recognizes Al Cavero, West Covina Unified School District's Classified Employee of the Year. We would like to give him a round
of applause. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Al has submitted by other classified employees as their Employee of the Year. He is a person with integrity. His excellent work habits are noticed by all staff members. He works well beyond the expectations of the job description. He is the most reliable, competent, and committed worker. He is friendly and courteous to all who encounter him. He is friendly and He generally cares for his site, including every member there. On a special note, he quietly works behind the scenes. Every day, he carefully selects students and teachers. Teaches them important character traits like respect, honesty, and integrity. Most importantly, his humor lifts the morale of this whole site. They enjoy his character and work ethics. They love him.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless you all.
We appreciate
appreciate all of you coming. We're going to take a break now. There'll be refreshments out in the room, so you can have a chance to congratulate the people who were honored this evening. And once again, thank you all for coming out and making this a special evening.
She does.
Thank you. Thank you. She was thrilled with the district room soccer. Well, now when she finds out she's a babysitter, she's not surprised. But we're not offering summer school. It's not summer school for school. Okay, we can't call it that. It's the sophomore students that need it. That's all. But we're not going to ask them for other summers that somebody gets a contract from us. We get the contract to the office.
I'll say Ms. Castillo will direct somebody. She or somebody so directs you to get back to you.
Yes.
Yeah. So good.
We're having a good time out there.
Now, they told me that...
So Monica says to Steve and Mike, isn't this nice that Lily has instituted? Oh, now, we used to do this before. And she goes, oh, you did it. Yes, we used to do this before. Way before you, Monica.
Authority, you know. You made him to move up to the first team rows.
The ultimate excellent.
Is he going to come
out? No, he's going to be here to meet with it. Because they met today, too. They've already met.
That's a bit dumb as the matter. Greg, is he here somewhere?
Yeah, he is.
So excited, huh? It's a little bit stressful to see. A lot of testing to be done.
Oh, so you're having
fun
now?
Naturally, we can be smooth sailing.
You didn't do that.
It was really pretty. We had it at the USC.
We re-adjourning the meeting at 7:37. In closed session, it was moved to expel student number 155312. It was moved by George Buller and seconded by Steve Cox. The vote was unanimous. It was, that was a readmit, that student number. And it was, same motion, it was moved by George Buller and seconded by Steve Cox. The vote was unanimous to lift the expulsion for student 155312. It was moved to expel student number 194027. By Jessica Shoemaker, and it was seconded by Steve Cox. The vote was unanimous to lift the to expel the student for being under the influence. Is there anything anyone would like to report out?
Just
Mr. Fuller?
Several open houses I went to. It was nice to go to a new intermediate middle school and see things that were cut up and displayed and out. And I just wanted to comment on that. I hadn't seen that. And it was very well. Also, I had the opportunity at the same middle school to meet a collaborative team that was collaborating and could articulate how they were collaborating and present evidence of collaboration and obviously to the students' benefit in a co-teaching manner. So all the other open houses were very nice, but it was nice to see frogs all wrapped up and laid out and properly labeled and all those good things. So,
just a couple of quick things. At the track at the high school, they've had a big multi-school invitational track meet, utilizing that. And then last week I was there and noticed there were quite a few people there and didn't know what it was, and they're using it for the regional finals of the Junior Olympics program. And so I'm nice, glad that we're utilizing the field and such strong programs are being utilized there. And then, as I just shared with Steve Olivas, I had a somewhat emotional but rather kind of monumental event happen in my life yesterday. I spent some time at Holland Crest and parted with my sixth grade trumpet and donated it to Holland Crest Middle School.
Mm. With your name on.
No, it's a piece of junk, and I sure hope that goodness somebody can play it better than I can. But anyway, that's all I have.
Student board member report?
Okay, so at West Covina High School, the last 2 weeks, we've had our AP test. It's been quite intense for the kids taking those tests, and it ends this Friday. This Saturday, we have a summer breakout dance, and it's basically a celebration, like an end of the year, have fun kind of celebration for all students on campus. Next Wednesday, we have a diva dance-off, and this is when all our talented dancers, whether from our school or on the team, they get to perform for our students to see. Also, next Friday, we have our Renaissance Rally, and that's the academic celebrating academic achievement, and it's also a goodbye senior rally, so our seniors are very excited for that. And the theme is Happily Ever After.
Oh.
So, and that is pretty much it happening.
Mr. Spence had something he'd like to share.
Well, I just wanted to recognize in the audience one of our longtime former board members, Pete Sabatino. Pepito's here today. So welcome back, Pete.
Victor Valley. De Ala. I'll have to take remedial Spanish.
You will.
Hello, my name is Victor Valle, and I am the future editor-in-chief of West Covina High School's paper News Bites. Lately, we have been under pressure to subject to our administration's offer of prior reviewing of our paper. Now, although there is nothing in the educational code against prior reviewing, we believe it to be wrong and unnecessary. Our paper has ran with solely students and with the help of our advisor for years now. We have never had any problems with it at all until this year. Now we are being given only prior reviewing or not publishing as options. You may wonder why prior reviewing is bad in our eyes, so here are some examples why. With prior reviewing, you know, it teaches students that their ideas really have no value or are dangerous, and it says students don't need to be critical thinkers. Also, it says someone else will take responsibility for whatever they do, which, you know, isn't what you want to learn when you get older. It says the First Amendment is not a necessary part of society, and it shows journalism teachers are not needed because school administrators know best. And lastly, it says students no longer need responsibilities, morals, values, ideas, imaginations, dreams, and hopes, because then they can expect someone else to always provide them for them. Our paper has gone perfectly fine for years before without prior reviewing, and adding this will only make it worse. The stress and tension level will only increase because of the thought of an administrator looking at our pages. It will also make people feel restrained to do their best and cause the quality of work to drop. Prior review is not a good idea whatsoever and takes the student's responsibility away. Isn't that what we are supposed to learn? How to take responsibility for our actions instead of handing them over to our superiors? So after these demands were handed to us, we went to administration and had a meeting about this. Nothing was exactly changed, but we got on better terms and kind of figured out both sides of the argument. But one thing caught our ears. That was that we were informed that the district made the policy to put our paper under prior review. We and our advisor have not seen anything or heard anything about this, so that when we were told that the district policy and not the choices of administration, it really made us wonder whether or not that was true. But overall, I hope you understand why we are here. We are here so we are working so hard to keep our paper student run and away from prior reviewing. Because if we are forced to resort to prior reviewing, the paper will lose its true meaning. And all we have dedicated our time to will be nothing. I believe the purpose of the school's hierarchy is to instill democratic values. Free press offers opposing viewpoint to power. If kids don't learn that in school, how will they exercise it as adults? Thank you for your time.
We appreciate, we always appreciate students coming out and hearing your voices and taking a part in the democratic process. We understand that Mr. Stanley has been working with you. He will continue to work with you. He's here, and he'll, if you want to continue the conversation this evening with him, you may, or at another time at your convenience. Mr. Olivas.
Hello. My name is Stephen Olivas. I'm the band director at West Covina High School, also a proud parent of a freshman at West Covina High School this year. She's doing a fine job, and oh, yeah, she's a freshman.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We're moving on. And so I'd like to speak basically to the status of the performing arts at West Covina High School and brag about what's going on as well. But first, I'd like to thank the administration and the district for their support through the grants that have come through the state. They're well spent. I want to tell you how most of it went. Sound and lighting had gone to the drama department, and they're utilizing them out now at this time. Computer systems that run the lighting through a program and help the students figure out how things are done with lighting in now in the modern age, so to speak, instead of just standing there behind the lights. Art equipment through to the art departments as well, along with mirrors for the dance team, correct? And they're looking forward to seeing those put up. And in my department as well, a sound system for both the choir room and an outstanding mobile sound system for our instrumental music, where the drumline used them in competition. Not only did it work for them well, but because they were able to project more, they moved from the Scholastic A division into the top world division, where they took second place in competition this year. So they've done an outstanding job with your support. The excellence moves on. The choral department superiors in festival. Our dance team is a continued national championship. The band, the jazz ensemble, took second place at the Mount Sac Jazz Festival in the intermediate division. The concert band, a near superior performance as well. And the drumline, again, I just boasted about them as well. Drama has taken, they've placed in all five competitions that they've gone to, including the last where they took first place. And also hosting a Shakespeare Festival coming up very soon. Moving on, the future of the programs, I'd like to say, are moving strong as well. The Foreigner is the title for the next drama production, as well as a musical we're going to try to do next year, Footloose. So you can look forward to seeing that. Yeah, yeah, and that's a collaborative effort between dance, drama, and the music department with the singers, again, with a backup band as well by the jazz ensemble. So we'll see how that goes as well. Again, combined efforts by the department, the growth of the dance team for the future. They're about 100 students strong for the 2010 year. The band, I'm recruiting heavily over at Edgewood, Holland Crest, and San Jose. The color guard this year just had tryouts, and from a team of 20, we're now up to a team of 44. So we're looking very strong for next year. I hope you'll come and see us in competition and at the football games. And then travel and the things that we do. Mr. Wiggins, by the way, I just want to go ahead and give him a lot of support and let you know that he's doing a fine job in his first year at West Covina High School. And finally, through the continued efforts and collaboration with the surrounding colleges, we've been doing really well to get our students involved and into the future of their performance in the fine arts. Mount Sac, the band went to a festival and a jazz festival. Citrus College performed for us last week on campus. All the groups tend to go to these colleges, as well as Fullerton, Cal State Long Beach, Cal Poly, and UCLA gave us a ring the other day as well. So I'm looking forward to that. And again, my last comment is I'd like to, again, make the Fine Arts Department at West Covina High School available for any kind of future talks about fine arts in our district, the future of the fine arts in our district, and that we, through the VAPA committee, which we were all part of, and any other discussions that we can have, we can communicate and continue this support and the future success of our programs. Thank you very much, and thanks for having me today.
Thank you.
Can we get a list? Can we get his list?
Of students?
No, of his programs.
The list of the programs offered?
they just read.
Okay.
Sure.
The awards.
Can I email them to you?
Yes.
Yeah. Or
if you could get email them to me and I'll send them to you.
Very good. Thanks.
I know where to reach them.
Very easily.
Colleen Nguyen.
Good evening. I'm here to discuss about the program cuts in the schools. All children need individualized curriculum. Even gifted children need specialized program. In order for gifted children to perform to their full potential, they need GATE programs that will challenge them. These programs help increase academic performance, increase test scores, increase good social behaviors, and keep children off the streets by keeping them busy. My daughter had struggled in school. She didn't have friends. She had physical symptoms that needed medical attention. The programs available at school has helped her succeed and grow. She is one of the many that is being honored in pentathlon. Other programs such as YACES have also helped me as a single parent of five children in the school district. I believe in the three-way school contract that we sign at the beginning of each year. It was upsetting to me that parents were not notified that the GATE summer school had been canceled. I believe that program cuts will hurt our children. Also, I know of people who have taken their children out of the school district. I'm here to ask for your help to find ways to help keep the programs such as GATE Summer School.
We appreciate your input, and Ms. Castillo or her designee will get back to you.
All right, thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board at this time? Seeing nobody, we will move on to the organizational part of our meeting. Is there anything anybody would like to take off of consent? Is there anything anyone would like to add to consent? I don't think there's anything to add.
Six.
Okay.
Can we?
Yeah. Okay. If nobody opposes, we are going to add six to consent. Is there a motion to move the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Jessica Shoemaker moved it, and George Fuller seconded. And thank you, Steve, for for your input. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. That brings us to item number 7.
Thank you. I'd like to call Mr. Seaman up to the microphone for a brief presentation on the district's expulsion procedures and practices.
Thank you. There's a packet of information in front of you, a pink and a blue. The blue packet is just a photocopy of the county plan that was part of the agenda tonight. And then the pink packet is what I'm going to go through here, basically talking about the several steps that occur before a student is actually expelled. And I'll go through that right now. The steps that happen is if there's an incident that's reported to the staff or they observe or witnesses observe, then an investigation is done to determine if those things actually happen. Students are interviewed. Adults are interviewed if they're there. Campus security is interviewed. Any person that's a suspect or a victim or a witness would put their information in writing, and then the school would determine whether to suspend if the incident actually occurred. Once they determine whether they're going to suspend, then they determine whether it's an expellable offense. If the student has numerous previous incidents or the incident warrants expulsion recommendation, which is part of your packet that shows the mandatory expulsions, then they would call my office, the Pupil Services office, and we would talk about the incident and then set up a pre-expulsion meeting, which is necessary in EDCO to have that pre-expulsion meeting. Recommendations for expulsion come from the principal of a school. The actual movement from that recommendation to a hearing needs to come from another party, which is in this case is myself. So we have the meeting for the pre-expulsion, and at that meeting we go over all the evidence. The parents are invited to that meeting of the student that is suspected of the or alleged wrongdoing. And all the documents are presented. Their history is presented. The student has a chance to tell their side of the story to me. The parents are there to tell me any other incidents or any other factors that may come into play. And then I make a decision at that meeting whether to go forward to an expulsion hearing or not. Whether if I decide not to go through an expulsion hearing, then the student would serve out their suspension and then return to school. If we decide to go to an expulsion hearing, then we schedule a hearing, and by ed code, I need to give parents 10 days from that point to prepare for the hearing because they have the right to seek legal counsel or to seek any type of representation and to obtain witnesses for the hearing. All hearings are done here at the school, here at the district, so we schedule the hearings usually on Monday afternoons, and the panel consists of administrators from other schools. They cannot have administrators from that particular school. I preside over the hearing, and somebody from the school site that recommended the expulsion will present the evidence for the school and the district. Then the student has an opportunity to present their evidence and cross-examine witnesses. Then the panel makes a recommendation to expel or not to expel. If the panel recommends not to expel, then the student is reinstated and sent back to school. If they recommend to expel, then I bring it to the school board for a final decision because the decision to expel comes from the school board. Everything else is recommendations. So we follow these steps basically from start to finish. And as soon as they make a recommendation, then my office is involved from the beginning to the end. Parents are communicated with both verbally and in writing, and that is an ed code and part of board policy. And then you make a decision whether to expel or not. We communicate that as we reported out tonight. I'll communicate that in a letter to the parent, and then we find placement for that student and communicate the rehab plan for them. Once they complete the rehab plan and the time frame has passed, then they can apply for readmission. And again, another face-to-face meeting with me to prepare documents and show documents that they went through their rehab plan. Then I would make a recommendation whether to readmit them or not to you, and then you would make a decision to readmit them or not. That basically runs step for step. That most of this is legal parts for ed code that we're required to do. Some of it is our policy that's in board policy. And that's basically the process.
Mr. Spence, does that answer all of your questions? You asked to have this agendized.
I did. Actually, I wanted to talk about one aspect of it that I know has become a controversy or I've heard of, and that is the issue of confessions. When I read what you gave us here, a confession from somebody is actually direct evidence.
Correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
So it's not indirect evidence or hearsay. If someone actually confesses, can you go through that? How many times does someone have to confess to doing something before it's brought to us? Or how would it work? Like, let's say...
Well, if they interview the student that's suspected of the alleged wrongdoing, they admit to, say, doing the wrongdoing, they would ask them to put that in writing. I mean, that's one of our trainings. That's one of our process and practices. Things that are in writing are better evidence when we go to a hearing. If they happen to be appealed to the county, because that is one option that the parents have, that's one of their rights. So we try to have everything put into writing. Sometimes students will refuse to do that, but if they confess, then we have them put that in writing in their own words, in their own handwriting, and sign it and date it. We then would find any witnesses we can, whether they're campus security, other teachers, other students that may have seen what went on, and again have them interviewed and put their statements in writing to corroborate anything that we have from a confession or any other student witnesses. Because the more evidence we have, the more corroboration we have, the better case we have if it happens to get appealed. Plus, it's better evidence for me to decide whether to go forward to an expulsion or not.
So they confess the one time, and then later on at the hearing, you evaluate that confession? Do they do it again?
I do. I ask the student again what happened, have them tell me in their own words. I have the document in front of me. I can see if stories match, if they've changed anything, and then that would cause a discrepancy for me, then I would delve even further before I would even go to a hearing. That happens during the pre-expulsion.
And how often does it happen that someone changes between one confession to another?
That they confess on paper and then come to the pre-expulsion and deny it?
Yeah.
In my 8 years, it's probably happened maybe 4 or 5 times.
Okay. You know, because the issue, I guess, gets to whether or not school administration is somehow coercing or forcing confessions out of kids. And I'm just trying to see how someone could see that or how that would work in this process. And you have no idea yet?
No. I mean, there's a time when they're interviewing the student, mm-hmm. but that is not something they've been told or actually have been told not to do.
What would be the benefit for them to try to get confessions out of people? I mean, you know, like if a DA gets confessions, they don't have to go to court and they get to put a little notch in their thing and stuff like that. But what school officials don't have the same kind of motivation.
No, it still would have to go through the process, and I would reevaluate it at that time. And then even after I evaluate the pre-expulsion, it's reevaluated at the hearing, because that's the evidence that's presented at the hearing is really the only evidence that counts.
So if we as a board were to start discounting direct evidence like that, that'd be very unusual in your experience. They would say we don't touch witness statements, we don't touch self-witness statements, or things like that.
Well, the information you get from me, it comes from a memo that basically summarizes the process and summarizes the hearing, gives you the pertinent information that happened. I mean, you don't see the witness statements or get a transcript of the hearing. I mean, okay. It's possible to do that, but this summarizes the information that was presented and goes through what the process was, either the pre-expulsion, the history, or during the hearing.
Has students ever confessed to things that they weren't really under investigation for, and then they get brought forth for expulsion? Like someone gets found with some marijuana on them, and you ask them what they're doing, and they say, I was going to sell it. You know, it's like their answer, which actually makes it worse. Has that ever happened?
Yes. I mean, a student that's in possession of marijuana, the interviewer may ask, what were you going to do with it? They say they're going to sell it. They don't always understand the hierarchy of offenses, mm-hmm. but they may tell us that their intent was to sell it. They may tell us their intent was to use it, to give it to somebody else. They're holding it for somebody else. There's a number of things.
And that becomes direct evidence then?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Mr. Cox.
You know, this is a real tough situation for me. And I'm not saying that we do, but the potential for sort of this abuse of not power, but abuse of position as such. I mean, it could be as very simple as, you know, kids sitting in the back two rows, and by a mere suggestion by somebody who appears to have authority giving them direction, they then move to the front two rows for no reason whatsoever other than to be rather annoying and obnoxious. You know, a child coming in having been that referred to by a teacher or being caught by one of our aides or something like that, then going in to talk to, you know, the principals or assistant principals or the deans or whomever it is, you know. I remember seeing Claudia Cochran's dad the first time. That was pretty brutal at Covina High School. But anyway, I digress. Isn't there some level, though, that it, you know, that may bring that this sort of confession is really sort of coerced? I'm always stunned how somebody could be at Cameron Park, for instance, do drugs, come to school, have nothing in their possession, perhaps an odor or something of that nature, and then confess to, you know, all worldly sins and that. So, you know, is there some, you know, some level where, okay, wait a minute, settle down, let's, you know, get some calm. Do we need to call your parents in? Do we have another responsibility to the other 3,000 kids, say, for example, at the high school, to, you know, make sure this child's dealt with? Or should we wait before we do this, make sure that they've got sufficient, so they're settled and know what they're doing? And, I mean, not having an attorney. Maybe I've watched too many
CSI.
Law and Order and CSI or something like that. I don't know. Go ahead, I don't know. I'm finished rambling.
Okay.
Thank you.
There was a question in there somewhere.
Yeah, is there some level that, you know, of concern that you might have that it might be
not in observe. I mean, if you're talking about the high school and observing the deans or the assistant principal, usually at the high school the principal doesn't necessarily get involved in the initial stages. But observing all except Mr. Stanley, I've seen them all handle situations, and I don't have a concern that they are coercing false confessions, mm-hmm. if that's what your question is. But in the case that a student, say, was at the park, came over to the school, and they smelled of marijuana, there would be questioning of, you know, what were you doing at the park during school hours? Why were you over there? Why aren't you in class? You know, you smell of an odor of marijuana, mm-hmm. and what were you doing again? They would ask that. And if the student said, you know, I was over at the park smoking marijuana, they would, you know, all that gets put into writing, and then they would ask them why. Why do you do those things? Then they would make contact with parents, probably would suspend, and then depending on the situation. Anything involving drugs or weapons is an automatic phone call to my office to determine what the next step is, or graffiti. So some students that have maybe a first offense would not come forward to an expulsion hearing, may get to an expulsion, may not get to you, because the panel then would recommend not to expel. So it all is a case-by-case basis. But in answer to your question, I don't have a concern with any of them at the high school or the middle schools. Like I said, I haven't seen Mr. Stanley deal with discipline, so I couldn't answer that one.
Do kids have any other rights per se to, you know, having a parent with them?
They can ask for that. And we've had parents that say,
Do you tell them in advance?
We've even had parents that said, don't interview my student until I'm contacted.
And was that just a standing order?
Well, they say that, and we also have, you know.
Or do we have them sign rights? Do they sign their rights away at the beginning of the
students season? Have rights on campus.
And they can say, no, I don't want to talk to you. I want to wait till my parents are here, that sort of thing. Do we tell them in advance that, look, we're going to question you. We have some, you know, we're concerned about, you know, this, that, or the other. And
similar to reading them their rights? Not that I know of, no.
Should we?
We could. I mean, I personally don't know if that would hurt at all, to be honest with you.
Mr. Fuller.
I guess I was going to ask legal counsel to come, but you seem very knowledgeable.
You're going to ask what?
What is legally defined the board member's responsibility, each board member's responsibility in voting for an expulsion?
Well, you have the right to vote yes or no to expel a student. There are five cases that the Ed Code says unless there are extenuating circumstances, meaning there is not enough proof to say that that student did that, that student by Ed Code needs to be expelled, which is in your packet of mandatory expulsions. Anything else besides those five offenses, a board member has the right to vote yes or no to an expulsion.
Based upon how they examine the evidence presented.
In our case, basically it's based upon the information that I give you or any other further information that you would ask me. I mean, that's really all you have on the issue.
So, in other words, if we have a judicious review where the parents have confidence that after a process they go through, that they'll step in front of their elected officials to see if their child is going to be removed from the district for a year and probably alter their life considerably for an extended period of time, we should be exercising our judicious review in whether we vote yes or no on an expulsion.
I think in the best interest of the student, we all have to exercise that.
So in the best interest of the students, if we establish a standard that we want to see come about, and we believe based upon past experiences and input that that standard hasn't been met, we should vote accordingly. Is that correct?
I would say yes.
Okay. So in terms of training, what type of training are we providing to our administrators?
Training as far as discipline and things actually comes from my office. So okay. I would train the administrators on investigating and interviewing.
And in cooperation and in gathering evidence, are we also working with the SROs as well as yourself, and how to further investigation to establish, say, cooperation independent of a confession?
When we had the SRO before, that's what we did, and currently that is the practice since we've gotten Mr. Black. on board.
So
there was a space in there where we didn't have SROs, so they weren't as available.
So as we set a standard, our administrators and educators can meet that standard.
Yes.
And have demonstrated that in the past.
Yes.
So we can. So if we have a standard to meet and they meet it, I'm not quite sure what we're doing here. Other than that's basically what has gone on in the past.
Yes, I'm sorry.
So I'm glad to hear that. There's a lot of confusion. I'm glad you're showing this direction. I hear things like Mr. Spence say, if a person confesses to a crime, there's no trial. And I've been on the witness stand enough times.
They've
been on the witness stands enough times to know that there is a grueling exercise if a person's facing the death penalty and has confessed to a crime. That one had best be together, and I would like our administrators to be able to exhibit that same in terms of their gathering evidence. That I would think that each person, as they step forward, each case could stand up on its own and face that grueling type of cross-examination for the good of the student and the integrity of what is transpiring. I don't think we need to advise anybody of their rights. There's enough case law that says that we can interview without advising of rights. I don't even think we have to stop interviewing anybody if their parents say we can't interview them. I think the principal can call them in the office and interview them with or without their permission, as the case law says. We have a school to run, the child comes. It's not an option. And I would encourage us to be up on those case laws and to exercise them in a judicious fashion, but when it's safety of the school and it transpires, we should be aware of that. So I don't want us to transgress in the rules of Miranda and, you know, do we have to call the parents and all these things. I just want it to run smoothly. But I want it to run for the good of the student and the good of the school with integrity. In addition, I take it you have a strong rehabilitation program for those that don't get to expulsion. So we don't have many. I take it there's many more that don't get to expulsion than we actually see.
Yes.
And that somehow you're able to turn it around with your program.
We try as many interventions as we can before they get to you.
And from what I can gather, successfully.
Most of the time.
Sometimes we don't.
Sometimes they're not. I'm not going to tell you 100% of the time.
No.
I'd be lying.
But a good part of the time.
Yes.
Otherwise, we'd be in possession all the time. So I want to congratulate you on your ability. And as juveniles, is that the best route to go, or is it just to remove them from the school?
Sometimes it's the necessary route to go. I don't know if it's the best because it really depends on case by case. And sometimes I've had students that have come back and really enjoyed their time at Del Norte and not had another problem and graduated just fine.
But you said case by case.
Yeah. I mean, every student's different. I mean, we expel a student and sometimes it's really positive and sometimes it's not so positive.
And sometimes you rehabilitate.
Right.
Ms. Shoemaker.
I just wanted to follow up on a couple of questions I heard from Mr. Fuller. The parental involvement in this process, how many different opportunities do parents have an opportunity to be involved? From what I count, they have the initial call, the expulsion hearing. They are allowed to come to the Board of Education if the district determines that expulsion is necessary to talk to us. Correct. And if they do not like the result from the Board of Education, they can appeal it to the county.
Correct. There's one more time, and that's between the initial call and the hearing when they have the pre-expulsion meeting with me.
Okay, so they have six different opportunities. So by the time a student's expulsion comes before the Board of Education, they've had five opportunities to protect their student's rights, and the report that we get recommending expulsion would cover if a parent was against it and would let us know what the arguments against the expulsion would be.
Right.
So when we as a board vote,
we have both sides of the picture.
Yes.
And if we have any questions on your report, we have every opportunity to contact you before a meeting or even ask the questions during closed session.
Correct.
Just wanted to make that very clear that parents are always involved. Students are given every opportunity. If they confess, they confess. We have every opportunity, if we don't like a confession, to have questions asked about the confession.
Correct.
How many times, and I think you can answer this question because it's not going into closed session detail, in your 8 years, have you had a parent, once it's gone through the expulsion process to get to the Board of Education, have you had a parent come to the Board of Education to...
In 8 years, probably around 10 times.
And how many expulsions on average would you say we have per year?
About 40 or 50.
Okay.
Over those 8 years. Some years are higher, some years are lower.
That's all I had.
Mr. Spence.
I just have one question, because there was some discussion about expulsion being deciding what's in the best interest of students. And I've always viewed it, that is definitely one thing that you look at, whether or not the rehabilitation plan or where we're expelling them to is appropriate. But is that somewhere in code? Because to me, expulsion sometimes is to protect 2,000 other students.
Right.
Or to protect, you know, the students on the campus. It's not just what's in the best interest of that one student. You have to look at that plus the impact of having someone who did X, Y, and Z on this big campus.
And that is part of the criteria for an expulsion. If it's not one of the five mandatory, you actually have to be able to prove that all other things have failed or they are a danger or safety concern to the rest of the student, staff, and themselves.
Okay.
So that is part of Ed Code that would have to be proved if, you know, when it comes to us, when it comes to me, that's what I look at. I look at all the legal parts of it because, to be honest with you, I don't want to do the wrong thing, and I don't want something overturned.
Because when I'm voting, I'm not just voting in the best interest of the student. I'm combining both those things and trying to weigh them. And, you know, is expulsion appropriate? One. But if it is, you know, what's the best thing to protect the whole campus or staff? Because we've had that as well. Or, you know, this. And then what might rehabilitate that student? Okay. Thank you.
Is there anything else? I know when I came onto the board, that was probably the thing I struggled with most, is having to expel a student. What I came to terms with is that we don't send them to nothing. We try to send them to what's most appropriate for them. And we do, the few parents that have come while I was on the board, we did work with them. If they weren't comfortable with where their child was being sent. And I know that you had actually accompanied several parents on tours to Eldar Norty, and they were, after seeing the program, they were satisfied that it would meet their child's needs, and they were happy about that. But it is a struggle, and I know that that was one of the hardest things for me to have to do. But I think we handle it very sensitively, and it's always difficult for everybody involved. And I appreciate the input you gave us this evening, and I hear no other questions, so thank you. I'm going to go through it one more time. I believe that's... That brings us to the conclusion of our regular meeting. There is dates to remember that you can have a chance to look at. We are going to re-adjourn into closed session, but before we re-adjourn, Mr. Spence had something he would like to...
Actually, two things. And one was, I read in the paper that we're getting stimulus money. Is it about $2 million worth of stimulus money? And I was just wondering... Is that money that's already figured into our current budget plan, or is that money that we could use, for example, to save some of the cuts that you know, we heard tonight about K summer school, but some of the cuts that are out there, what is, do we have a plan already for that? I understand it's one-time money, but do we have that, the plan for that? Or what is our plan for that?
You're talking about the stimulus money?
Right, that I read down in the paper.
No, we have no plan for that at this time. We were waiting to see what our allocation was going to be, and we will bring forward to the board a recommendation at the next meeting.
Okay, so it's possible we could be restoring some of the things that we weren't doing. Is that correct?
It's up to the board. So, but it's just, there, you know, within the parameters that we had to assure the state in order to get the money, the state and the feds have said, give us these assurances, and Mr. Frutos can talk about the assurances he has given in order to get the money. So we'll discuss the parameters and the possible uses for the money.
Okay. I would like to see as part of that discussion, Madam President, is the, you know, what we did cut and what programs are not going on that we normally would have put on had we not had this. The shortfall, because we may be able to save them for another year or whatever. So I'd like to see that rather than forgetting that we cut this stuff and then focusing on just new stuff. If that could be part of that whole
yes,
discussion.
We will do that.
The second thing is this morning my daughter on the way to school won a radio contest, and it's going to be at American Idol's finals on Tuesday.
Oh my gosh.
And it's going to be part of, they said, the program in the back while the two finalists are singing or whatever. So
wow.
I've never watched American Idol and really had no plans ever to watch it. So now
going?
I have to find out what segment that's going to be so I can still stick to that. But so you can watch American Idol Tuesday
exciting.
Night.
Exciting.
And I refuse to do any signs. I don't know. I think she's going to take my mom. My wife, I mean. So we'll see her mom. That's it.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we adjourn the regular meeting at 8:17, and we are once again readjourning into closed session.